Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs of bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because Matt can feel it, this is MuggleCast episode 130 for February 2nd, 2008.
I have a story I thought I could kick the show off with this week. I was in the bathroom the other day, and I was using Neutrogena facial scrub for acne for my face.
Okay.
And I'm putting the scrub on my face, and I'm rubbing it, and it gets in front of my nose. And I breathe out of my nose, and I actually created an air bubble in my right nostril as I blew, because the soap was like right in front of my nose, so I blew this huge bubble. I was like, whoa, this is cool. I'm going to talk about this on the show. And then it popped.
Are you serious?
First time listeners, welcome you to MuggleCast, a Harry Potter related discussion podcast.
I thought it was a good story. I thought it was funny.
Well, you need to think harder.
But Andrew, you have to somehow tie that. You have to somehow make the connection, even though Jamie's not here. You have to, like, if it were Jamie, you'd say, okay, I was shaving and I blew this bubble, and
it was unexpected and surprising, just like everything in the Harry Potter books, and it was fun. I wish I could have taken a picture.
Well, it's a good story. I mean, I wish I shaved.
You don't have to shave. Jamie doesn't have to shave. Eric doesn't have to shave. I have to shave like hourly. My facial hair is growing in so quick. I'm so manly.
Such a liar. So
oh my gosh.
You're very manly, Andrew.
Laura has to shave like once a week.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. How about that? So we have a good show this week. We're going to talk with Paul DeGeorge of Harry and the Potters. He has a new charity effort out, and we're going to talk to him about that. And also, he's going to reveal a new MuggleNet demo. Well, actually, it's not new. It's been around since 2005, but it hasn't been released to the world until now. It's a demo song about MuggleNet. It's fantastic. So I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Matthew Britton.
And I'm Mikey B.
And Mikey B's here.
Yeah, woo!
Micah Tandenbaum's in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. Although he has shown an interest in working on the much-anticipated final installment of the Harry Potter film series, it has emerged earlier this week that Guillermo del Toro will not be directing Deathly Hallows, since he's rather busy, as put by producer David Heyman. In fact, it seems that he will instead be taking the reins of The Hobbit and its sequel film. Since Deathly Hallows is set for release in 2010, and principal photography for The Hobbit begins in 2009, he would not be able to work on both projects. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling has been awarded with an Outstanding Achievement Prize at the UK's The South Bank Show Awards, which recognize British achievement in music, theatre, television, and the arts. The awards will be broadcast on February 3rd on ITV1. As we told you earlier this week, filming crews are preparing to start shooting scenes for a Half-Blood Prince at Gloucester Cathedral. If I get one more email, I swear I'm going to go crazy. As you can see from the photos, preparations are clearly underway. We'll update you as we know more. And those of you in Canada will get a chance to see James Runcie's documentary, J.K. Rowling, A Year in the Life, this Monday, February 4th, at 10 p.m. Eastern on CBC News World. The documentary originally aired back in December on ITV. We will keep you posted on any plans for it to air here in the United States. Finally, there will be a new face to the character of Pansy Parkinson in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. A&J Management is reporting today that Scarlett Byrne has been cast in the role of the sixth-year Slytherin in the upcoming Potter film. The part was originated by Genevieve Gaunt in Prisoner of Azkaban. That's all the news for this February 2nd, 2008 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thanks to Micah for that. Once again, it was another one of those slow news weeks, but there's going to be some interesting news coming out within the next couple of months concerning the seventh film. But we haven't really... There's no official announcement yet, so we'll have to wait for that. But in the meantime, this week, we found out that, Del Toro is directing The Hobbit.
Well, not technically directing just yet.
What do you mean?
Well, he's in talks with him right now.
So he hasn't signed his contract
No.
yet.
Oh, I thought he was signed
but
on.
But he's shown very much interest, and Peter Jackson really wants him, and apparently it's going to happen, but it's just not official yet.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know what? Like, honestly, it's going to happen because Del Toro is just amazing, and him directing The Hobbits because Jackson doesn't want to right now. Jackson has so much on his plate. It's ridiculous.
He does.
What he's doing.
And I love all the films he's doing right
he's
now.
He's producing
too.
So many films right now. He's also doing the Halo movie, too.
Oh, right. And but he's doing Tintin. He's doing The Adventures of Tintin with possibly Rupert Grint that they were talking about
That's
a long time ago.
That's true. But would Peter Jackson just. Now, he's having obviously some creative control of Hobbit, isn't he? I mean, just shocks me.
Well, yeah.
He's a producer, isn't he? He's a
producer. So,
well, that's
the producer doesn't have. Well, a producer doesn't have as much creative control as, like, a director or even, you know, people that are going to be storyboarding it for him in
right.
kind of deciding where things are going to go. But he's definitely going to be there to collaborate because. Truthfully, what's going to happen is any director, especially if you have someone that talented as your producer, you're going to ask, what does he think about what's going on? Just like my biggest concern, like last summer, Michael Bay did Transformers, and I was a huge fan of Transformers when I was younger, but I hate Michael Bay as a director. Not anymore. I think he did good on that movie. I really hated a lot of the stuff he had done. A lot of the stuff he had done was bad, but he had Spielberg as his producer on that movie.
Matt, does this come as disappointing news to you? Because I know you were hoping for Del Toro to direct.
It's kind of bittersweet, I guess, because I mean, I really like Del Toro as a director. I mean, I absolutely love Pan's Labyrinth, but knowing that he's going to direct The Hobbit, which I'm a huge fan of the book also, I really can't complain. I mean,
now Matt, I know you're a Del Toro fan. Are you excited for Hellboy 2 as much as I am?
Yeah, a little bit.
Come on. Have you seen the trailer? Del Toro, when he had released the trailer.
I was being sarcastic.
And he's like, everybody, this is Hellboy 2. Like, he was so excited to do Hellboy 1 and Hellboy 2. And I just think everything Del Toro does is
everything he does is
as
good.
Of like recently.
Well, we'll wait for more developments about the movie, but it should be very interesting to see how they're gonna. You know, of course, there's still the rumors going around about Deathly Hallows being split into two movies, and then of course we still got to hear about the director. So we're hoping for an announcement about all of that soon. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, but if I was, I would say that Deathly Hallows is definitely going to be split into two.
Hmm.
Well, that's just if I was a betting
man. Do you think it's going to be split into two or just like a long movie?
No, I think it's going to be split into two separate films.
I hope so.
Why would they do that, Andrew?
Because they want it to money. Be good, I guess.
Money? Well, no, money.
Yeah, exactly.
That means they're going to get all of us to go twice to see the movie and buy two different DVDs. And then when they come out as the combined DVD, buy the combined DVD one.
Yeah. that's true, too. We'll have a really good, I'm sure we'll have a really good discussion once there is an announcement made about, you know, the film being split into two. Of course, if that happens. Okay, so moving on announcements real quick. It is a new month. Happy February, everyone. It's the month of love. Vote for us on Podcast Alley. Get us up there in the top 10. We already are now February 1st, but there's only a handful of votes. So thank you for placing your vote over there. I know I voted earlier today. Placed my
so
vote.
Did I.
You good, liar. Good. You did not.
I did too. I have the confirmation email to prove it. It's easy. It's very easy. You just go to Podcast Alley. You hit vote for us, obviously. And you put in your email address. Then you click the link they email to you. And you're done. Also, just a little update on the little East Coast tour we're hoping to put together. One bookstore chain turned us down because they would rather we do a tour in the summer around Harry's birthday or the Book 7 paperback release. But, of course, we can't. We don't really want to do it then. It's too late. We want to do spring break. So we're looking at other options right now, and hopefully we'll have something more firm to announce within the next few weeks. But we are still working on it, just so everybody knows. But let's get right into Muggle Mail now, because we have a lot to discuss on this week's show.
Okay, first one comes from Emily Kate, age 16, from Bangladesh. She says, "Dear MuggleCasters, I was sitting in study hall listening to MuggleCast, and I had made it through almost all of episode 129 without my study hall supervisor noticing that I was listening to my iPod, which I'm technically not supposed to listen to in class. There was about a minute left in the show when you guys were talking about Micah's pregnant comment, and I started laughing so loud the supervisor came over and I didn't notice. I had my iPod taken away, but I got it at the end of the day. But it was a great episode, so worth it."
Aw.
Thanks.
Aw.
You know, I've actually done that before, too. I was listening to an episode, I don't know, I think it was early episode of MuggleCast, and I'm just, like, sitting there, and then I start cracking up out loud. And I'm sure it was something like Ben or Jamie did.
No, I'm sure it was my
joke. Each other.
It was, actually, it was right.
I think it was the yeah. Something like
thanks.
That. Something like that. Or Simsy or something like that. Pickles.
Yeah, we get emails
know.
Like this from time to time saying that we do that. We get people in trouble in like science class and whatnot. But yeah, that's funny.
But you should be paying attention to your classes because education.
Yes, you should.
It's for the future. It's for
yeah,
the future.
What was study hall? It was so, study hall.
That's not important.
I always used to sleep in study hall.
The next email comes from Jeff, 23, of Connecticut. He writes, "In regards to tracking umbrage to the ministry, I believe it was said in the book that only top officials were allowed to directly apparate inside the building. Umbrage, being undersecretary to the minister, would most likely have been one of said top officials. Therefore, it probably would not have gone unnoticed if Creature showed up in the middle of the atrium and apparated away with one of the top officials. Unless they were able to somehow track down where Umbridge lived, the ministry seems to be the only way of finding her. Next, as far as Harry once again seeing into Voldemort's mind, not only was it useful, but in the book it also stated that Harry gained control over the visions while burying Dobby after their escape from Malfoy Manor. On page 478 in the American edition, it says, "His scar burns, yet he was master of the pain. He felt it, yet was a part of it. Yet was apart from it. He had learned control, at least, learned to shut his mind to Voldemort, the very thing Dumbledore had wanted him to learn from Snape." End quote. I think this was useful because after this, he seems to be able to invade Voldemort's mind whenever he wants. I think this was crucial to the book because it was probably the only instance in the whole series where Harry seemed to have a true magical talent over Voldemort's. This may not be very relevant to the chapters you were discussing in your last episode, but I think that they were nonetheless important to the story. But to conclude, maybe Hermione was right to tell Harry he should block out those visions because in the end, it gave him the control to look into Voldemort's mind whenever he wanted, which Hermione even encouraged him to do during the battle for Hogwarts. So, yeah, that's basically the point I was making. I mean, it just works to their advantage. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Harry won the argument when he was talking to Hermione in the bathroom. He was like, you know, I'm totally going to do this, and I want to know what my enemy is doing. And Hermione's yeah. like, whatever.
This is probably why I like Book 7 so much for Harry's, because he's so certain now. You know, he actually knows more than a lot of the people who are trying to inform him on.
Yeah right, he's very yeah. confident.
Yeah, he's the most confident in the series.
Like, I just read the Lupin scene today, and even though, like, you're shocked about how Harry acted, it's just, it's so well done. and that Harry's like, you know, his own person. It's really cool.
All right. This one comes from Alexis from Westchester, New York. She writes, "Hi, everyone. I just listened to episode 129 and was particularly intrigued by the lengthy discussion about parallels between Harry Potter and the Holocaust. As Laura said, Buchenwald and Auschwitz were Nazi concentration camps in Germany created and used to, in essence, exterminate European Jews. Nuremberg and Auschwitz had the words, work makes freedom carved into its front gate. Nuremberg was a prison that housed Grindelwald's opponents, and its entrance bore the slogan, 'For the greater good.' As also stated during the show, Dumbledore defeated Grindelwald in 1945, which is another parallel to the Holocaust. The prejudice demonstrated by the Holocaust still haunts us today by way of racism and genocide in our world. In the wizarding world, Grindelwald's ideas are projected through Voldemort and the pureblood muggle-born prejudice we've seen since Chamber of Secrets. Just wanted to add to the Harry Potter Holocaust discussion, because I've spent years learning about the Holocaust. I love the show, and I hope to meet up with you at the New York live podcast."
If we do it.
Yeah, it is really interesting that you bring up that point that Auschwitz had the work makes freedom sign. You can actually read that in Elie Wiesel's Night, which is an account of...
Eli Wiesel.
Yes, he was a Hungarian Jew. Spent time in Auschwitz.
I read that book in, I think it was 7th grade, and it was a really powerful book, and also, though, I've been to a concentration camp. I went to Dachau when I was in Germany, and that also has the sign above the entrance. It's work, I believe it translates to work makes one free, or you know, work makes freedom, same deal. Work makes one free is pretty much kind of ironic, but that's what the Nazis put on the gates of the entrance of the work camps. So I've been there in person. It's a really somber or really solemn place.
Well, and it's just interesting that Joe kind of used that whole "for the greater good" thing, because that's a lot of what the Nazi propaganda was based on. Just this idea that they were going to purify Germany and keep, you know, the evil, dirty Jews out and the perfect, you know, wonderful Aryans in. And it's just, it's awful.
Yep, absolutely. And last chapter, did you guys talk about the throne of Muggles? The throne made of Muggle bodies?
Yeah, yes, we did.
Yeah, because that was really, there's something, there's a structure in Dachau like that, and it's a bit sickening.
Really, is it the same thing? Like,
it's not a throne of bodies, but I think it was a wall made of impressions of bodies or something. It was actually of all the Jews and stuff. It was actually quite grotesque. But I think it's inside Dachau. So there's something very similar that I've seen in real person, and it's just really, really strong parallels in Joe's book. And earlier I questioned, and this relates to this chapter too, on the show I questioned some of the parallels. You know, I said, do we really need a Nazi parallel in J.K. Rowling's works? I think reading these chapters, I think it really sort of made me rethink that comment, and I'm really happy with this sort of parallel, because in a way, just the way that we see the ministry, you know, befallen in these past few chapters, and now with what Lupin is telling them and all this stuff, of how the tabloids are taken and all of this stuff that we're seeing, it's good to have it in a children's book, because all these kids who read, you know, obviously about the Holocaust are seeing it also happen in their favorite boy wizard to have it happen to Harry Potter. So I'm really proud of Joe for this, and I retract what I said before about it not really being needed. I think it's really good.
Okay, and our next email comes from Emily Rowe of 18 from Rockaway, New Jersey, and she writes, "While listening to last week's episode 129, I noticed that you guys also recognize the parallel between the Death Eaters and the Nazi Party of Germany. If you will, let me throw in my two cents about this parallel. One, Hitler's main focus of prejudice during the Holocaust was the Jews, when he himself had Jewish blood in him. Voldemort thought that Muggleborns and half-bloods were unfit to practice magic when he himself was half-Muggle. And even if he resents that part of him, it does not take away the fact that he has Muggle blood in him. The next point is the one I stress the most. The swastika has been used for thousands of years as an Asian symbol for peace and prosperity. If you take a look at artifacts from India or anywhere else in Asia, you will see the swastika carved into them. Then Hitler got a hold of it, flipped it around, and tilted it on its side to associate it with the Nazi Party. This is similar to Grindelwald's situation with the Deathly Hallows symbol. He posted this symbol on the walls of Durmstrang, and it became negatively associated with him, considering that he became a notorious dark wizard. But was a symbol for the Deathly Hallows really that bad? Did it really represent something evil like destroying Muggleborns? That's all I have to comment on that subject. I love listening to you guys, and it really makes my day. Keep up the fantastic work, Emily. And
thanks.
Can I first interject something about the Hitler is Jewish thing? That's actually not proven. No one knows for sure. Where the theory comes from is that Hitler's grandfather, they believe Hitler's grandfather may have been part Jewish because his father was an illegitimate child. And so it's possible that his grandmother, they know that she worked in the home of a wealthy Jew. So it's possible that the son of the household got her pregnant, but no one knows for sure. But everyone does know that Hitler did not practice Judaism. So just to clear that.
No, I'm sure he didn't.
Yeah. Like, so I don't think it's really fair to say that he was Jewish, because
I do agree, though, with her second point, though. I think that really is a good,
that's a very nice connection.
A good parallel between Deathly Hallows.
I actually said that over the tour. I said that over the tour once.
That Deathly Hallows symbol we talked about, or I remember talking about it when we did the chapter The Wedding, and just saying about it. We don't actually know, you know, Crumb said that it was Grindelwald's symbol, and Crumb was really sort of adamant that Grindelwald killed a lot of people. We don't really know exactly what Grindelwald did, do we? You know, as of the end of the seventh book, we just know that he was all about sort of wizard above muggle. And sort of how that.
But, you know, we can't really just. It can't be really a World War II Nazi comparison, too, because it happens way down in the past, too. Like with the Devil's Pitchfork is actually a Triton from Neptune, I think it was.
Yeah. Well, religious symbolism, yeah. It was actually from the pagans used that symbol, too. And so it's.
Right.
Well, even the
pagan witch hat, too.
Yeah, yeah,
they
exactly.
Associate that with the evil.
All this, it's actually called iconography, I think, or religious iconography.
Oh, of course.
Or something like that. There's a bunch of names for it.
No, that's actually what it's called. That's what it's called.
That's what Robert Langdon studies, I think, isn't it? In Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons?
Yes. Da Vinci Code, yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
So there's all sorts of talk about all those. It's really fan. It's really fantastic, the history of symbols and stuff like that. It's all in that book.
Well, let's just keep rolling along here right now. We're joined by Paul DeGeorge now, who is Harry Year 7 and Harry and the Potters. Paul, how are you doing today?
Hi, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on. This is my first Muggle cast appearance. I'm really pumped.
Yes. Well, we wanted to have you on for a couple reasons today. First of all, we want to talk about Harry and the Potters, though, because essentially it was the first wizard rock band, right? I mean, do you like to take credit for it, or do you give it to, what is it, the Switchblade Kittens?
Well, you know, I don't mind taking credit for it if you're gonna give it. Sure.
I mean,
really, like, Joe and I guess, were the first ones to sort of, like, do something so conceptually consistent where we sort of adopted the characters of Harry and created our own band around it, where we are exclusively doing, you know, like, Joe's Harry Year 4 and I'm Harry Year 7, and through the magic of time travel we're able to start a band together, you know, kind of just assuming that if Harry had that ability to travel through time, that's what he'd choose to do with it, I guess.
Right.
Start a rock band.
Why did you do Harry Year 7 and Harry Year 4?
Well, at the time we started, which is almost 6 years ago now, Joe was about 14, and so we thought, well, that's about year four, right? He was just about to turn 15, so we're like, well, that's where Joe goes. And I was a little older, like I was in my early 20s, so I was like, well, you know, all those characters on, like, Beverly Hills 90210 were, like, in their 20s playing high school kids.
Right.
So we decided to go for that. Like, I'd be Harry Year 7. And since then, we've taken the kind of Simpsons approach to it where we don't ever age.
You never age.
Yeah.
Yeah, as is the case with most TV shows this day. Why did you start the Wizard Rock Band? Why Harry and the Potters? Why Harry Potter music? Since there was nothing at the time.
Yeah, well, you know, Joe and I had, we played in bands, and we'd never played together. We're brothers, and there's 8 years between us, so we never played in a band together, and we kind of, like, the idea just came to me one day, like, what if Harry Potter had a band, you know? Yeah. And I thought, well, that's something so cool to do with my younger brother, you know, is to do, like, this goofy, silly, fun band. And what really appealed to us about it was, you know, these Harry Potter books had such a huge effect on so many young people's lives, you know, inspiring kids to read and getting so many kids involved in literature. We thought, well, maybe we can sort of take that to a new level. And, you know, if we start this band and write some rock and roll songs about these books, maybe we can convince libraries to let us come and play in their library and play these rock shows and get younger kids involved in rock and roll and seeing live music.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like at first, you know. We would be playing in these libraries around Boston, and a lot of parents would take their younger kids, like between 8 and 12 years old, to come see us. And it was great. You know, we had no audience established, and we were playing to like rooms of 50 to 100 young kids. And eventually, like, this was back in 2003, like, we kind of noticed over the course of the summer that year, as we had played in all these libraries around Boston, more kids were coming regularly, and they would start to know all the words to our songs. Like, they had got our CD or something at a show, and they were coming, and they'd know all the words to the songs. I'm like, this is incredible. And then shortly after that, the Harry Potter fan community sort of caught wind of us. And that's when things just kind of got crazy for us. You know, we honestly, at the time, had no idea such a thing existed, that there was like this incredibly cohesive and enthusiastic online fan community. And it was actually, oddly enough, it was a post on MuggleNet at some point in the fall of 2003 that really slammed our web server and, you know, shut us down for a few days, I think.
You know...
And that's when our band sort of took a national presence, I guess.
You know, it's funny you say that, because for the past couple of years now, we've been, you know, we've always thought that we were the first ones to post about you guys. And then Melissa Nelly from Leaky came to me a few months ago and said, can you find the post where you guys made the Wizard Rock, where you plugged Harry and the Potters? And I looked it up and I found it, and we actually credited Verita Serum for tipping us off.
Okay.
Like, whoa, it actually wasn't MuggleNet. But we did post that, because I remember, I think it was Ben who posted it, or maybe Emerson. Do you remember who it was?
No, yeah, I can't remember. But I just remember being like, whoa, look at these websites. They're all about Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction to the online fan community, was around that. And a lot of, at the same time, maybe just a few days before, it was like really the LiveJournal community that kind of created a buzz about us. Like some fan fiction writers and stuff just started mentioning us, and that kind of took off. And all of a sudden, like, you know, I had a $400 web bandwidth charge, you know, for the month.
And now you guys are on Trivial Pursuit cards.
Oh,
you
man.
You
want
to tell this story?
Yeah, I guess we've come a long way in the last few years. We got on that's the most incredible thing that's happened to us, I think, is just a couple weeks ago, somebody sent in a JPEG, and it was a photograph of a Trivial Pursuit card from Sweden. And the question reads, what do brothers Paul and Joe DeGeorge call themselves when they
that
rock
is amazing.
Out? And the most amazing thing is there's not even like a context clue there, you know?
Right.
They're just assuming that Joe and I are household names in Sweden, which I think is kind of an outrageous assumption. I think it's probably considered a difficult question in the game.
That's like something you would expect for like Bruce Springsteen. I know you guys are big Springsteen fans.
Yeah, right?
Like, you too or something. But yeah, that's awesome. That is so cool. I wonder, I bet you guys would love to see some reactions of people playing that game, being like, Paul DeGeorge, what?
I know, right? It would be amazing. Hopefully somebody's going to send us the card. I think the girl who notified us is going to send us the actual card so we can frame it up,
of course.
You know, That's the kind of thing you don't even dare to dream about. Like, you know, what kind of jerky kid says, like, someday I want to be on a Trivial right. Pursuit car, you know?
Like, what the hell are you thinking? So, I mean, now today, there are literally hundreds of Wizard Rock bands out there.
And yeah, my last count was 420.
Oh my God, you count? Where do you count?
Well, no, I just look up on Wizard Rocklopedia and then... Then I copy the entire band list and into an Excel sheet and then let that count for me.
That's a good idea, actually.
There's a lot of Wizard Rock, man. Well, it's incredible.
Do you have any thoughts about this? I mean, just how it's grown so much since you guys started this. I'm sure you're supportive of all these bands. How I see it is, it's a great way for anyone interested in music but doesn't know how to get really noticed. It's a great place to start because there's all these Harry Potter fans that are dying to just try out all these new bands.
Yeah, well, you know, honestly, the way I think of it is like it's almost like the beginnings of punk rock, you know? Like the whole thing about punk rock is that it's the kind of music that anybody can play. And, you know, there's these stories about people just like, you know, grabbing guitars and drums and bass for the first time and just playing songs, you know, whatever came to mind, like bashing it out on a mm-hmm. few chords. And that's kind of like what I see in Wizard Rock is these kids, they're so pumped and amped on Harry Potter that they're just looking for another way to sort of express that love and that passion.
Yeah.
And so they're grabbing instruments and starting bands for the first time. And it's really wonderful. And the cool thing about it is it allows for such a diversity of music out there. You know, there really is like something for everybody in the Wizard Rock community. You know, there's all sorts of stuff out there. And there's plenty of like, you know, it gets as abrasive or as pop friendly as you want it to be. You know, there's like, you know, a metal band in Holland playing songs about Voldemort, you know, and it's like there's right. black metal and there's like ultra pop, ultra poppy stuff, you know, and dance pop and all that. And so it's all there. And, That's the most amazing thing to me is what a kind of diverse and welcoming community it's become, where kids feel free to really experiment and try things out. And the unreal thing is that there's a community there for them to do it with and to get that feedback and support from. Whereas, if it was a different situation, you know, maybe these kids are only like recording in their bedroom and playing cassettes for their friends or something. I mean, that's possibly what this would have been like 10 years ago. But with the advent of technology and MySpace, you know, it's so easy for a band to become instantly legitimized by MySpace. You know, you just throw up a profile and all of a sudden you have a band. You throw up a profile and a song and you're a band officially.
MySpace, create a new account. Boom, you're done.
Yeah, 10 minutes, you got a band, for real.
MySpace really is the... where every Wizard Rock band is, right? I mean, why does everyone go to MySpace? Just because they have it's just great to host your songs and all that? Or?
Well, the thing about MySpace is, and it's not just Wizard Rock bands anymore. I mean, far as like the music industry, like it's where everybody, like if you're going to a concert and you're like, who's the opening band? They're like, oh, I don't know, you know, whoever. You're just like, oh, I'll go check out their MySpace.
Because
you know that if you go to their MySpace, you can listen to their songs, you know? And then, you know, you might have, if you say went to their website, then maybe you'd have to dig around in their website to find their songs and listen to them. But you just go to MySpace and the songs are right there and you just listen real quick.
Yeah.
And so it's that sort of accessibility of the music, I think, that's made MySpace so prevalent in our habits nowadays.
That's interesting. I mean, and then all your fans can comment on them. And do you guys base, like, I've always figured this, I don't know if this is how you guys think of it, but do you guys base the popularity of all the bands based on how many friends each of you have? Because, I mean, if you just, like, look at the list, you know, like, you guys have, like, a gazillion friends, and then everyone's lower from there. do you guys base popularity, or does it not really matter?
Well, I don't ever measure anything by popularity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not really a concern of mine. So, I just think that, I don't know. I don't really have any comment on that, I guess. Like, it's not even something I think about. Like, who cares what's popular? Just find what you like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Now,
All right, I guess we'll talk about Wizard Rock EP of the Month Club now. This is your big thing. You started it last year. Now you got Matt Majacimo from the Whomping Willows helping you out. What is the Wizard Rock EP of the Month Club?
Well, the whole idea behind the EP of the Month Club was that it's sort of modeled after, like, these old record clubs where you would join up, like, Sub Pop. You know, the record label used to run a Sub Pop singles club. And, you know, they would release... They started it in the early 80s, and actually, like, you know, the first Nirvana single was released through the Sub Pop singles club and stuff like that. But the idea was you sign up for a year, and it costs, like, 50 or 60 bucks, and every month you get a new record in the mail. It's a 7-inch, you know, back when records were cool.
Right.
It's sort of modeled after that idea, and... what we did last year was we got together, or I got together, 12 bands that I thought, you know, was a good sampling of bands in the Wizard Rock community at the time.
Yeah.
And there was, at the time there was far less than 400. I think there was like 100 or so. And so I just picked a bunch of people who I thought would be fun to work with. And, over the course of the year, we released 12 different CDs, you know, and people who subscribe to the club would get a couple CDs at a time in the mail, and we had stuff from you know, like Harry and the Potters released a CD, and Draco and the Malfoys and the Parcel Mouse and the Remus Lupins, and so all these bands were contributing CDs worth of material, like usually between 5 and 10 songs that were all made just for this club. You know, they were all exclusive CDs, and we pressed 1,000 copies of them and sold about 750 subscriptions, and each band got a couple hundred copies that they could sell on their merch table. But otherwise, all the money from the subscriptions went to a organization called First Book, which is a national nonprofit that donates new books to children from low-income families. So it's just trying to promote literacy at an early age in communities where kids don't often have access to that sort of thing.
Right.
Think of the joy, you know, as a little kid, how pumped you were when you got a new book, or like mom brought home something new to read to you at bed or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea behind what they do. And they've been a great organization to work with. And so in 2007, we had the club and we sold subscriptions, and eventually the club sold out. We sold over 750 subscriptions, and so far we've raised over $13,000 for First Book.
Wow, that is
through
incredible.
Subscription sales. Yeah, and this year we're doing it again with a whole new group of bands. Harry and the Potters are kind of staying on as a flagship, I guess.
Of course.
So we'll be releasing another CD this year through the club. And
all new music, too?
All new music.
Wow,
yep.
Sweet.
Handful. Yeah, Joe and I, we had a really fun time with it last year, where Joe and I kind of like set aside a weekend and kind of wrote and recorded all the songs that weekend.
Cool.
Like as fast as we could.
Yeah.
And we came up with like 14 songs, and I think our CD's just under 14 minutes, you know. So it's really, really, really a quick thrill ride of Wizard Rock.
Cool.
But it was super fun for us to do, and I had a blast sort of overseeing the club and, you know, helping each band like put their CD together, like the artwork and all that. And
yeah, the so albums are really cool. They're nice and organized. I mean, you have that certain theme going on with each album cover. It was really nice.
Right. We tried to have it give it like a sort of consistent feel.
Yeah.
So it feels like you're getting like at the end of the year, you have a collection. You have 12 CDs that all go together in some way. And we'll be doing that again this year. We have a different artist on board to handle like the overall look of the club, and it's going to look really cool. It's going to look, you know, really wonderful. I've been working with them for the past few days on getting stuff together for this year.
Sweet.
This year I've got Matt Majacimo on board, and he's kind of helping. We've been throwing ideas around for, you know, and we kind of picked out the bands together, and we've got a great new troop of bands. And you know, if people, I should mention who the bands are, so that people can get excited. But Matt's band, the Whomping Willows, will obviously be contributing an EP, and rumor on the street is that it's going to be the Big Wompy EP. So Matt's sort of been teasing everyone with certain Big Wompy, like, hip-hop style tracks for the past few years.
Nice. Yeah.
And this time he's going to make do on a whole EP's worth, so that's going to be pretty exciting.
Awesome. His shows are always fun. I regret to say I haven't been to a Harry and the Potter show yet, but the Wompy Willows, Matt's a really fun guy. He's just playing there with his acoustic guitar. He really interacts with the crowd.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Sorry, go on. Just had to say.
Yeah, no problem. You'll have to come see us sometime, mm-hmm. Andrew. I'll put you on the guest list at the library.
Yes.
That doesn't actually exist.
Those didn't shows think are so, free. Since it's a public library, yeah.
No. So we got the Whomping Willows and Gredin Forge, which is this guy Jared from North Carolina. I'm really excited about him. He actually just put out one of my favorite Wizard Rock CDs, which is called Half the Band I Used to Be, which is both a brilliant title and a brilliant album. Really fun, like, poppy, punky stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Think of like really awesome Green Day songs. That's the kind of stuff Jared's doing with Gredin Forge.
Uh-huh.
We've got Catch Love, which is, you know, one of our favorite Wizard Rock activists. Jace is an awesome dude, and he's all about promoting good causes and that sort of thing. He sort of uses his band Catch Love as a forum for Darfur awareness, which I think is incredibly wonderful.
Okay, yeah.
He's become a really great member of the Harry Potter Alliance and stuff. And we've got the Hermione Crookshanks Experience from California, and a couple really fun acts. We've got Tom Riddle and Friends, who are these two hilarious dudes from the Cincinnati area, I think. They're just kind of like, the way Matt described them to me was, he said they're like, if Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson started a band about, you know, from Voldemort's perspective,
uh-huh.
which is really hilarious.
Yeah.
I totally, totally suggest checking those guys out. Their MySpace has some really fun stuff on it.
And I have the list
the giant,
right here.
The giant squid. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going off the top of my head. But
okay.
We got the Giant Squid Stravaganza. He's a really pro-environmentalist Wizard Rock. Sort of in the same lines as, you know, the Whomping Willow is pretty heavy on the environmental stuff. And
yeah.
So is the Giant Squid. He likes to plug that. He's got some good stuff planned for sure.
Cool.
The
Nifflers.
Yeah, the Nifflers, Canada's first representatives in the Wizard Rock Club.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they're I'm such a sucker for, like, these sibling duos, you know, like Draco and the Malfoys. And the Nifflers are a brother-sister duo from the Toronto area. Super nice folks.
Gryffindor Common Room Rejects.
Yeah. Oh, man. They're great, too. they're like a pair of high school girls who produce really cool lo-fi, like, punk rock on, like, keyboards and stuff like that. It's really, really fun stuff.
Okay, cool.
They kind of remind me of our band, where we would just, like, hit play on one of the keyboard demos and then record a quick song over it, you know? It's just like that.
Nice and easy.
Yeah. And really fun, too. And,
yeah.
And we got Justin Finch Fletchley, the Hufflepuff representative. He's actually one of Matt's old friends from the way back. He's tight in that circle of the Woonsocket Wizard Rockers.
Oh, okay. You
know? Woonsocket, Rhode Island representing. and I think the last, the Mudbloods. They're from the Texas area. They're fantastic. I really love their stuff. Just great indie rock sound and stuff, and they've got a great attitude, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of try to pick bands that we really thought would be both fun to work with and had, like, a really great positive attitude that reflected what we like best about Wizard Rock.
Yeah.
Know?
It all seems they're all very into they're supportive of the idea of raising money. Since
yeah, well, exactly. You know, that's the whole thing behind the club. That's the end result. Like, we both want it to be super fun for people who are subscribers, and we think it is, because, you know, over the course of the year, if you subscribe, you're going to get 12 CDs, you know, and those 12 CDs are only coming to you and a few other 100 people in the world.
Right.
You know, they're made just for you, and I think there's something cool behind that. And then at the end of the day, you know, the club costs $60, and I know that's, like, kind of a lot of money, but at the same time, you're getting 12 CDs, so it's like $5 a disc.
Right, yeah.
And they're all mailed to you. It's very convenient. They show up at your home once every few months. And then we're going to raise, through it, we're going to raise a ton of money. And this year, we're sort of expanding it. We're hoping to sell a few more subscriptions this year and maybe raise like almost twice as much money as we did last year. And
okay.
The money this year is going to go to First Book again, and we're also throwing some money over to the Harry Potter Alliance's way.
That's great.
Because this is going to be a big year for the HP Alliance.
Oh, we've definitely. Got a lot of cool Especially with Joe's cool backing now. Planned.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a wonderful comments she made about the HP Alliance recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so everybody at the HP Alliance is super pumped about that and just feel like this is the time to really reach out to the Harry Potter community and really catalyze them and really do something special together. And,
yeah, definitely.
And I think that's part of why Joe's excited about it and part of why the fandom is so excited about it is because it has this momentum to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more people who are on board, like the better the stuff we can do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So sounds like a good deal to me. Getting 12 CDs each with a few songs, what, 5 to 10 songs, you would say?
Yeah, typically 5 to 10 songs from each band. It's great.
Okay, cool.
And those are just for you Wizard Rock fans.
Yeah, and they look great. They come in they come professionally packaged and designed and all that,
oh,
right?
Yeah, it's no rinky dink operation.
There's no CDR from Walmart. This is the real deal.
Oh yeah, they'll go to pressing plants. I have a roommate who's a sound engineer, and he does all the mastering, so they sound great.
Oh, good.
Good. And they look great, and the bands are all great. So, you know, check it out. We've got a website that you can subscribe from, which is wizardrockclub.com, and you can totally check out more info on all the bands there, and read more about what we're about.
Cool.
But the gist of it is we're having fun with Wizard Rock, and we've got a bunch of great bands involved, and we're raising money for some really great causes.
Yeah.
And that really sort of encapsulates to me what Wizard Rock is about. You know, it's about this idea that we're going to have a lot of fun together, and we're going to, you know, put smiles on people's faces and try and do some good in the world too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's great. And you guys, the whole Wizard Rock community has a great sense of just togetherness, and it's like one big family. It's great what you guys have all created together.
Well, you know, it kind of stems from the whole Harry Potter fan community, actually. Like, I don't think it's unique at all to Wizard Rock. What it is it's really the Harry Potter community.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's unique in that way, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, in Wizard Rock, the bands help each other out and all that. But when you look at the Harry Potter community as a whole, it's such a welcoming place, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many people who contribute to that, you know. Like, you guys at MuggleNet are such a major part of that and bringing people together, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you guys must hear testimonials all the time, like, you know, these people met their best friends ever, like,
oh,
through
God,
MuggleNet.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's such a wonderful thing. And it's so cool to hear those stories and realize that, well, not only have these books changed people's lives in such a significant way, but it's really like they've created this community and these people are continuing to interact and be such a tremendously positive force in each other's lives. And now through things like Wizard Rock and the Harry Potter Alliance are taking that to the next level where we're branching outside the community of Harry Potter fans and like getting out into the real world and doing some really cool stuff.
Absolutely.
Even outside the fan community.
Yeah, there's quite a few examples of that in our fandom. So it's great. And I mean, if anyone listening, if you've never been to a Wizard Rock show, I highly recommend a Wizard Rock show with a few bands all coming together to play or even just one by themselves. I mean, they're always a lot of fun. And like Paul was saying, you know, you guys were impressed by some people singing your songs. I mean, now it's like all these people who come out to the shows are always singing along and dancing and just having a great time.
Yeah, it really is something special and unique, you know, and pure. So I would definitely advise anyone to go check out a Wizard Rock show in your area because there's a lot of cool stuff going on, and you're bound to have a good time. You know, you're gonna leave smiling. I've never had any sort of like real negative experience at one of these shows.
Oh,
you
no.
know? Everybody goes with such a positive attitude.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And when I think about like the time I wasted at like other boring concerts where people go and they like stand with their arms crossed and it's almost like they go to like tear a band apart, you know, like this band sucked or that band sucked. But like Wizard Rock is a total antithesis of that, where people are going because they want to have a good time. They want to see people. They want to have fun. They want to get dressed up, whatever, you know.
And it's a great time with all their friends. I mean, and you meet new friends there. It's just wonderful.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, is there anything else you wanted to bring up, or should we wrap this up?
Oh, well, you know, I earlier before we started recording, we mentioned that back in the day, I think it was early 2005, so about 3 years ago, Harry and the Potters, we were kind of working with MuggleNet loosely for a Book 6 launch event. And that's when I started interacting with some of your staffers, I think.
Yeah.
At the time, I don't know if it was one of your guys' ideas or mine, but I put together a MuggleNet theme song, which we never officially recorded, but which I did send into the MuggleNet circle. So
yeah.
I think now it's time for the official premiere of that.
Absolutely.
That theme song.
Three years later. It's premiere.
We'll dig up the demo and you can premiere it on this Muggle cast.
Right.
It's not a Muggle cast theme, but
no.
You know, MuggleNet. Close enough. Actually, you could just overdub me.
Like, yeah.
Ready? Here's the clip. Muggle cast. So you can overdub that at the end. Muggle cast.
Okay.
Muggle cast.
we'll have two versions. We'll have the MuggleNet and MuggleCast, and we'll just like rearrange your words and all that. So, no, but all right, so let's play the clip now.
We'll post the news, and your magic hungry Muggle eyes will devour every word, trying to pacify your appetite for boy wizard related things. How can there be so much Harry Potter news? MuggleNet.
Yeah, awesome.
Brings back memories. So,
cool.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great, Paul. We thank you so much for making that, I'm sure we'll get some feedback
about
it.
No problem.
I remember
no trouble.
Over, I guess maybe it was summer 2005 or summer 2006, Ben was always singing that song left and right. That opportunity.
I'm glad to know that it kind of lived on within the MuggleNet staff.
Yeah,
you know, even though it never made its way public until now.
Yeah, I almost forgot about it until you brought it up before we started recording. But that's good.
Cool.
All right. Well, Paul DeGeorge, thank you so much for joining us today on MuggleCast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Andrew, for having me. And
no problem. We'll check out your MySpace, myspace.com/HarryandThePotters. And also, you're in our new Wizard Rock section. You wrote up a lengthy interview for us, so thanks for doing that.
I went kind of crazy on it. I had a lot of time on a bus ride, so just...
No, it's great. It's great.
Went ballistic on your interview questions.
Well, it's all good. I'm sure everyone
cool.
will be enjoying that. All right,
great.
Paul. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
Talk to you again
all
soon.
Right.
That was Paul DeGeorge of Harry and the Potters. He's like Harry Potter himself, practically. He's like just as popular.
He's kind of a big thing.
He's sort of a somebody in the Wizard Rock world. I'll put it that way.
I really like what he's doing with the Wizard AP of the Month. I really like that.
Yeah, that's what we talked about. And this week we're just going to try one chapter, chapter 13, the Muggleborn Registration Commission. We feel like there's a lot to talk about with this chapter and the next one following it. So next week might be one chapter too. I don't know. Heck, we could be going to summer. I hope not, but not weekly anyway.
Yeah, well.
But, all right, so let's jump right into it. I mean, this is the episode. This is the chapter where Harry, Ron, and Hermione infiltrate the ministry, and Harry goes into Umbridge's office and searches for the locket, of course, to no avail, and they actually do end up getting the locket in one of the coolest scenes so far in this book, and probably one of my favorite scenes in the book as a whole.
Totally agree. So they've actually infiltrated the ministry in the previous chapter, but they're just stepping off the elevator. In the beginning of the chapter, Umbridge recognizes Hermione, who is Mafalda Hopkirk. And so Harry steps off the elevator, and Umbridge gets on the elevator. And Harry is confronted with Pius, by Pius Thicknesse, who is under the Imperius curse. Do we know who Imperius Pius is? That Voldemort, like directly Imperius? Because this
presumably
is the Minister of Magic.
It would be Voldemort.
No, I believe
it was Draco.
Yeah, they stated that someone was supposed to do that at the beginning. I don't remember who.
I thought it was Yaxley, because we were introduced to Yaxley in the very beginning of the book, and he taught in a. I believe Voldemort talks to Yaxley about what's the progress with the ministry. And he's like, we have thickness under our control.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I believe it's Yaxley, especially considering, you know, that would be great to build this character up, because he's kind of new in the seventh book, and he's the one that did this. I don't know, that's just what I remember
Yaxley's
from reading, guys.
Yaxley's making a bang. Well, I was just thinking in that scene, it would be so funny if Harry turned to him and said, you know, I'm Harry Potter, and just watch him, like, flip out. But,
honestly, I want to see, you know, who's Harry in person? He's Rancor? What's his name?
Runcorn?
Runcorn. And he's like this high-up Death Eater person. Yeah. I would love for Harry, like, when Harry and Ron are in the you know, elevator with Arthur, it'd just be like, Arthur, it's me, Harry, and this is Ron, and just like totally see like Arthur Weasley just flip out and go like, what are you doing here? It'd be amazing. Because Harry feels bad the entire time in that scene.
I agree. Well, that's what Joe's so good at writing, though, is these scenes, you know? Like, you really have to admire Joe for writing this, just how she did, because it's like you almost want to reach out to the characters you're seeing in peril, you know? Like Arthur Weasley getting intimidated and stuff, and it's just... I like how it all plays out.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's one of these... This book, like I think I stated a long time ago, this book is one of those things where I was mad at it throughout the entire reading, because it's like I wanted them to do something and they weren't doing it, or I was like talking to the book, and obviously, you know, it's not going to respond because it's a book. But I think it talked back once, but that might have been a dream or no sleep or something.
Half asleep while reading it. Yeah, that does it sometimes. Yeah, right before Harry goes into Umbridge's office, there's that group of wizards and witches folding papers, which turn out to be the ministry pamphlets, with a flower strangling another flower on it. What did you guys think of that? That pureblood pamphlet mania crap?
I thought... it sort of reminded me of, like, some, like, telemarketer office or something, like... Where they're all just grouped together and doing the same thing over and over again. I don't know if Joe's trying to draw another parallel to something within the government. I don't know.
Just the idea that they were magicking pamphlets together. What would they use to magic pamphlets? Because pamphlets can be made quite easily by just folding paper. But they were like magically waving their wands and... I know it's a point, but...
I don't see the point in doing that because they have paper folders. I used to use one in the job I used to work at. You put, like, a stack of papers in, and then it folds it three ways, and it comes out like a toaster. You just stick it in the envelope.
Cool.
Yeah. Office Max.
Office Max.
Actually, Staples.
I prefer Staples. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I prefer Staples, my friend. but you know, it's one of those things, though. But, like, even if they do have paper folders, Andrew, like, really, this is a wizarding world. We've seen them kind of... turned down, you know, short of the students, we've seen them turn down jeans and t-shirts as daily wear to wear cloaks. So obviously going to Staples, that was easy, and get a paper folder. They're probably just going to use their wand because it's free.
Yeah.
So. They can't be bothered, Andrew. Plus, the ministry needs to create jobs.
yeah, that's true.
Economy, good for the economy.
About the picture with the red rose being strangled by a green weed, being mean and evil-like. Do you guys see that? It's kind of like propaganda, like people do.
Yeah. It's propaganda. Oh, yeah. And Umbridge could have been responsible for that drawing, actually. That's what I think Joe hinted at, because she said when Harry took a look at that, he didn't know who drew it, but the scars on the back of his hand tingled again. As they had previously. So
I thought it was a good comparison, too, because, you know, roses are represented as, you know, the most beautiful, most prestigious flowers of the group, and that would represent, like,
weeds.
Pure blood. thought that was
nice. That's a really good point.
Yeah, but I think this also, the fact that, like, seeing a room of them folding it, it also lies in line with, like, the pamphlet, like, of what, you know, the ministry has done previously about, like, to how to, like, protect them and everything like that. I remember, like, I believe it was, like, Half-Blood Prince, and Harry's like, I received a pamphlet from the ministry, and Dumbledore asks, you know, and what did you think of it? It was, like, it's pretty useless, and that's kind of what I think we're kind of seeing, that these are pretty useless because they're propaganda, and we see them as propaganda. Because that's what the ministry does, because they're kind of useless already.
So the eye...
The eye nailed to the door, or, you know, attached to the door. Guys, this is sick. This is sick.
It's one of those classic Umbridge moments that I really was missing from Order of the Phoenix, because, like I've said so many times before, Order of the Phoenix gave me so much anger because of Umbridge, and that, you see... You see Mad-Eye's eye just framed up there like a trophy prize. It's being used, but it's still disgusting and wrong.
Well, it confirms that.
Yeah.
It confirms the fact that we know who got to Mad-Eye's body first, too.
That's, good point.
But I think the biggest question that came up to me when I read this was, where did Mad-Eye get that magical eye then? If it's so unique that they're taking it versus just creating their own.
Or getting their own,
where did he get this magical eye?
But I think Umbridge wanted it to just... I'm sure she was happy that Mad-Eye died, so... And I mean, they...
I'm sure she was there, too. She probably took it when they were examining his body.
Yeah.
Yeah, considering she takes the locket.
Yeah.
Too.
She's just taking
stuff. Yeah, she gets out and about a lot.
Yeah.
Umbridge gets around.
She goes to yard sales and everything.
Hey, for all you guys know, she could have gotten that eye at a yard sale. But realistically, yeah, that just confirms that the ministry got to Mad-Eye's body. How unfortunately.
So, I don't know. Harry walks into her office and he sees that her office is pretty much the same as it was when it was at Hogwarts, I can't wait to see that in the movie.
That's so funny. Yeah, because the whole time I was reading that scene, I was like, okay, time to bring the plates back out of the prop room.
Yeah.
Because...
time to get another photo shoot of the cats and everything.
Right. Well, hopefully. I mean, I'm sure they're happy about that, because now they know what to do for her office at the ministry. Same exact thing.
It's easy, too, because he says it's almost exactly like it was in the fifth story, so they really don't have to change anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually kind of freaked out rereading it, because after I had seen the movie with all those cats now versus like what I was envisioning before when I read the fifth book, now like when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, there's all these cats on the walls, and I just started hearing the meows.
It's so surreal.
And I, like, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
It's so like, meow, meow, scratching. Sorry, I'm freaking out.
I still just think of the cat plates they had in the bathrooms at the premiere party.
I know.
And
they would
God.
Meow and stuff. That was really funny.
Yeah, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
Such a nice
touch.
So do
I. I didn't go, so.
Well, not to have some insight talk even more, but another amazing thing about that after party is they had an indoor area, and there are portraits on the walls, but they were like plasma TV screens with portrait borders around them, and it was like moving wizards and stuff. It was so cool.
That whole thing was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was. Sucks you guys weren't there.
Well, I'm glad you guys had fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, Laura's the one who took a picture with Rupert.
So. I did. It's on my
Facebook.
That
was very exciting. I'm glad you did that.
So
to do that. But anyway.
So as if the shockingness, as if the chapter couldn't get any more shocking, Harry unsuccessfully searches for the locket unsuccessfully in her office. And, well, actually, guys, you want to talk about that decoy detonator? Because one of my favorite line in the chapter comes just as Harry is exiting Umbridge's office.
Yeah.
Can we jump to the favorite segment here quickly?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite line in this chapter is they're discussing the diversion that Harry created from the decoy detonator, and they say, I bet it sneaked up here from experimental charms. They're so careless. Remember that poisonous duck.
No, I agree, because it's one of those things where it's like, it also shows how like lax and like ridiculous, you know,
the office life is, gotten. You know, like, remember that poisonous duck that was up here? Yeah, those silly experimental charm people.
poisonous duck.
Yeah. So, guys, the ministry is sicking Dementors on the Muggleborns.
They are.
Which was very sad. But yeah. at the same time, it was definitely the coolest scene. Should we jump to that now?
Well, actually, yeah. there's something I put in here. There's something I put in there that goes along with what Eric was saying. Before we get to that down, before we get down at the bottom of the elevator, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is Eric brought up about the exploding the decoy, and that we know that's from the twins, and then Harry and Ron are in the elevator, and Arthur Weasley shows up. And Arthur tells Ron, not knowing that it's Ron, how to stop the rain in the Yaxley's office.
Yeah.
My quickest question is, how does Arthur Weasley know exactly the spell? Do you think it's the Order of the Phoenix, like, making rain clouds in the offices?
It's Fred and George's stuff.
No, he said he knew that spell because it worked for the other guy that had rain in his
yeah,
office.
But that just seems way too convenient. That seems way too convenient that he just happens to know it off the top of his head.
Well, what's
I think there's something along there where they're tossing rain cloud, you know, frisbees or something in there, making rain clouds in all the offices of the Death Eaters.
It's very Fred and George-ish, though. Like what they
yeah,
did in
yeah,
movie
that's
five.
Yeah, that's what I agree.
With the swamp in the Great Hall or wherever it was.
That's true.
Yeah. Swamp in the hallway.
Just because how close they're watching Arthur Weasley, I think it's unlikely that he'd be involved in it. But it is very practical.
I don't think he is involved. I think it's...
I guess I can see it not being Arthur, but I think Arthur knows exactly who's doing it and what's going... I can really see it being, like, a Fred and George thing where they snuck in and go, Dad, just let these go. And, like, him doing it nonchalantly and it just goes to where they need to go. Because that's just amazing. Like, come on, a rain cloud.
What stuns me is that the reigning office is floored Ron. I mean, when Hermione was mentioning suggestions, you know, finiti incantatum and or just impervious on all this stuff, these were all spells that Ron had been, you know, learned at Hogwarts for years, and he was just completely sort of unable to grasp the concept. He was fiddling in his pockets for a quill, you know, to write down the spells, and Ron is just completely stunned by this reigning office when Hermione told him the spells to use, and he just seemed
really
incompetent.
Well, we know Ron's reaction time isn't as quick as the rest of them. I mean, he doesn't have very quick reactions.
No, I know.
He doesn't.
Yeah, but it's also one of those things where, remember, it's, what was it? Who was it? Again, Niaxley said, you know, fix the office and I might go easier on your wife.
Yeah.
And again, it's Ron's like, I need to do this because I don't want an innocent person, you know,
right.
being
oh, you're
killed.
Right. He's getting freaked.
So it's like, so one, Ron is under pressure and stuff like that. I think you guys kind of picked on Ron a little too much because I like him. But
under pressure.
No, but it's one of those things. Yeah, under pressure. No, anyway. But no, it's one of those things where Ron definitely is put on pressure, and I think Harry, you know, even Hermione has problems under pressure. We see that coming up in a second. I'll bring it up again, but Harry is the only one that really does really well under pressure.
Fire, but there's no wood. Are you a witch or not?
Well, no, it's also the same thing. It's like, you know, there's, you know, again, like there's, you know, dementors all around. And Hermione can't cast a Patronus. It's the only problem. It's the only spell she's ever had problems with. It's like, still, it's like you're under pressure. I work better under pressure.
Speaking of Nazi parallels, there's a really good line in here when Joe is illustrating that Umbridge's Patronus is keeping the Dementor's cold sort of effects from reaching the prosecutors. And it's a line that says, that morbid feeling, you know, that dismal existence was for the accused, right. not the accusers.
Well, that's in the next chapter, isn't it?
No, that's in this chapter.
That's in this chapter because they're in the chamber.
We're
moving down. Arthur Weasley just told Ron how to get, and we're going down into Harry Potter's invisibility
cloak. Percy Weasley's on the elevator. He's off the elevator, and Arthur tells off Harry.
Yeah, Arthur tells off Harry, and Harry puts on the invisibility cloak, and boom, they're down in the courtroom. So that's where we're at.
I was very surprised by Arthur Weasley's attitude there, because I don't think that's the first. I think that's the first time we've really seen him act like that. Of course, he doesn't know it's Harry, but still, I was kind of surprised by how mean he was.
Pleasantly surprised.
I wasn't
though.
They're not pushovers. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're
it is
a family,
Mikey.
And they. What?
It's he's been hanging around undesirable number one too much, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Those were cool names.
Now, is it me or is that title just
It's the coolest title in the world.
Uncreative.
I like it.
I don't like it at all.
You know, who has not I want to start a wizard rock band. I've been thinking about it for a long time, and I'm going to call, before someone else does, I want to call myself undesirable number one. Because it's just another nickname for Harry Potter, but it's, I don't think it's taken. So
that is a really good name, but I think you just blew it.
You gotta,
but guys, didn't you know me and Eric started that band last week?
Oh, okay.
Undesirable number one is me and you, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
All you gotta do is, Paul and I discussed in the interview, all you gotta do is just create a new MySpace page and boom, you have a band. You're done. So just create the band real quick and
we should. Let's do it right now, before the episode comes out. Guys, you're listening to History in the Making. Undesirable number one is getting an email at Gmail right now and a MySpace page in the next
Mikey,
5 minutes.
Mikey, if you could do that, I'd love you forever.
Actually, I would let you do it because I'm actually looking at my bills right now.
No, that's okay. Just won't get done. Okay, giving that name up for the public. Undesirable number one.
Yes. Make it and then just give Eric credit for the name because it's awesome.
Hey, all right,
hey guys,
well, let's keep moving along here.
Can I say something? About, because we kind of passed it, and I really hate going back, but I think this is a pivotal one of the pivotal points in the chapter when Harry looks at the book by Rita Skeeter about the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore.
Oh, you're right.
And it has a picture of Dumbledore holding who I believe isn't it Dumbledore? He says it could be Armando Dippet. But no, Dodge.
Dodge. Dumbledore's there, and he says it could be Dodge. He's holding.
I kind of thought it was like Grindelwald or something.
I think it's either talked. I don't think it'd be Grindelwald in that picture though. See, it depends on what picture, like. But the one in the book.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's.
What made you think it was Grindelwald?
Yeah. I don't know because he was just holding his arm around him, looking really happy, and Grindelwald and him used to be really good friends.
What are you trying to say?
Well, it couldn't have been his brother.
They were lovers. I don't know.
Were they lovers?
No, they weren't.
No,
lovers,
they weren't.
But Dumbledore loved him.
You know what else is funny? Rita Skeeter. It said from the same author as Armando Dippet. What was it? Moron, or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Master or moron. It was pretty funny.
So let's get to the chamber now. In the courtroom, Harry's there with his invisibility cloak, scares Hermione by saying, I'm behind you. I love this scene. I think this is so cool. Mm-hmm. Umbridge is explaining that the locket belongs to her ancestors, and that just sends Harry through the roof. I really cannot wait to see this scene. Laura, what do you think about it, Laura?
I thought it was just fabulous. I mean, it's just another one of those Umbridge moments that you talk about where it's like she's just flat out lying. Like,
right.
So easily.
What's great about when she does these lies and stuff, she knows it's a blatant lie and she knows that she can say it and it's pretty much canon when she says it because no one can say anything.
Well, see, what I was going to say is like, this is great. You know, it's this blatant lie, but if she knew what it really was, it'd be even that much more because it was Salazar Slytherin's. It was one of the founder of Hogwarts. You know, she can say, oh, this is an old family heirloom, but it was originally Salazar Slytherin's. That's so much more important than it was like, it's been in her family for generations. And I just find it very ironic that she's making up a story that's not even as good as the actual story behind it.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, if she blatantly tells everybody that's from Slytherin, people are going to start to actually research it to see if she's a liar or not. If she goes Selwyn, it's a little it's not as prestigious.
Well, I know, but the whole thing is though, like the actual story behind where the locket is and what it is way more interesting and way more important than her made up story of it. It's been in my family for years.
Of course,
Umbridge has the locket around her neck and she's proud to wear it. But if Pius Thickness, if the Minister of Magic saw the locket at any point, when maybe she was walking in, she showed it to a minister. Do you like my new locket? Pius should have told. If Pius was under the imperious control of Voldemort, Voldemort would have seen that locket, and he would have recognized that the locket was out of its hiding place, and that's a potential big plot hole that I just thought of that.
Well, again, I thought we said that Pius
wasn't
under.
Yeah,
Voldemort.
I don't think he was.
And I think
I think Voldemort was lying low. Still, he's basically in control because all his cronies are controlling the Ministry. But he doesn't actually need to be like. I think they said like. I think Arthur or
it was Remus. Remus said, "Yeah, he doesn't have to."
Yeah, it's Remus that says he doesn't need to because he has virtual control without having to make, you know, himself president. If he did make himself president, then, you know, there'd probably be more people that would stand against it, because then it's obvious. Yeah. But
okay, but I'm
pretty confident
it
wasn't Voldemort.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's no Plowhole.
So another thing we wanted to talk about here. So Harry sends a curse at him. What was it again?
It was stupefy.
Stupefy. Yeah, right.
Was it stupefy again?
Yeah.
Oh, geez,
it was stupefy.
Spell, isn't it?
It was stupefy. Umbridge just
stupefy
boom,
again.
Face desk. Head desk.
Yeah, which is great. And then Hermione goes in to get the locket. One thing that Matt wanted to bring up was why does the locket not have an effect on Umbridge? Because as we know later on in the book. All right, we'll talk about it now just because Umbridge is wearing it now. Ron felt the effects of it. It made him separate from the group. So, what was it about Umbridge that?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but you can actually when they put the locket on for the first time in the next chapter, though. But, you could feel it an automatic like heartbeat. Like
yeah.
Wouldn't she feel that?
Harry said he felt the slightest. Heartbeat, I think.
Yeah, and you know, we read both chapters in preparation for this, but then we realized the chapter's too big.
Yeah,
for two chapters. But oh,
so the question is, why does anyone have any ideas or theories why Umbridge wouldn't feel anything? Like, does it matter if you're wearing a certain amount of like clothing that's protecting you from physically?
Well, she does have the ruffles,
touching
the
skin, her dress.
I think she did feel it. I don't think it's. I don't think the locket had no effect on Umbridge. I think though that Umbridge was so full of malice. When she got the locket, she proceeded to. I mean, that was when she proceeded to make those pamphlets and start crucifying and became the head of the Muggleborn Registration Committee. She was at a really crucial, like really. Powerful, self-important time as part of her career at the Ministry, and I just think the locket would have felt good, unusually good to wear. I think it attracted her to begin with, and that it was one of those things that empowered her to do her job and have all that malice and evil. So I she might not have noticed that it was like beating a heartbeat, but I think it definitely affected her and made her sort of brought out her evil and her cruelty.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
Definitely.
I have to agree with Eric, but I also think maybe it also kind of shows that because it is part Voldemort. I know Voldemort has a direct effect on a lot of people that see him that are not like his followers. It could also mean that she was also, you know, a Death Eater and she had been in his presence before and it did not seem any difference. I personally think that just because how evil she was, she would definitely be one of the Death Eaters. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
well, this, you know, yeah. Locket would not, you know, change anything, you know, than what she's been used to.
That's kind of the same as my theory too. Although I think since, yeah, it is a Horcrux and it's part of Voldemort, I think so the Horcruxes kind of have like a soul of its own, so I think it could actually sense if it's in danger or not. Maybe that's why it affected Ron so much, because it knew it kind of felt that it was kind of in danger into this group of people's hands.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was with Umbridge, it knew it was safe, or it just could sense
that's
a comfortable aura around her or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can believe that.
That's a good one. I think a big point of the locket is that it brings out the worst in people, and if you're a good person like Ron is, and it starts to magnify all of your worst traits, you're clearly not going to be very happy.
No, you're very fearsome.
If you thrive in being evil, like Umbridge does, then just making, you know, her power-hungry nature that much more bad would make her happy.
That's true. So, yeah, that's a good theory, too.
Yeah. Well, you know what Hermione does, guys? This shocked.
But wait a second. Was there anything that showed that Umbridge, her cruelness was exemplified?
Well, I'm not saying it's inhuman. I'm not saying Umbridge is being super powerful now that she has the locket. I'm just saying that the locket would have felt good to wear around as a general vibe. Umbridge would be getting this vibe to be cruel, and she is proud to have this locket that is from the Selwick family or whatever, which is not true.
Yeah.
Well, granted, she didn't.
That's okay. All right. I think that what it shows is it kind of took her whole pure her obsession with purebloods to a whole new level, because in the fifth book, she didn't really say anything about muggle-borns, did she?
No, she just hated half-breeds.
It was mostly about magical creatures. Yeah, and this just took it to a whole new level.
Totally.
But don't you think that was Dumbledore's, or sorry, Voldemort's doing?
Well, I think he made that easier for her to do. But it also, I think, could become more acceptable for her if she had, you know, if the locket did bring out that kind of evil, power-hungry, domineering personality of hers.
Yeah, I can go with that. I'll buy that.
You know what's so shocking that I read, guys, is that Hermione duplicated the locket so that Umbridge didn't know it was missing. Did you guys catch that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. But I thought that's pretty important.
That's so weird. So now not only is there a locket around Creature's neck, which is the false locket that RAB put in the basin to replace the locket he took, but now there's actually a duplicate locket that actually has an S. So it's almost like an exact replica of the Slytherin artifact without Voldemort's soul in it.
Uh-huh. But that's important, because if Umbridge thought it was stolen, there would have been this huge search for that locket, and
right, but
you know, they would have had
sure what exactly
Voldemort
does it matter?
Would have found out.
Yeah. What exactly does
right.
Oh, well,
it matters because they don't want another reason for Death Eaters and Voldemort to come after him, or Umbridge. Like, maybe Umbridge would have been really annoyed enough to go after.
Right. Okay.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
But
get
at
the
first,
locket.
I didn't wonder, because I mean, after they make the big escape from the Ministry, I think. I mean, there's several moments here, and this is another point too. There's several moments. See, Mary, the wife of Reg, who they're rescuing from this trial. She's really confused because Harry is, you know, personifying the man who put her there in the first place. But they shout each other's names quite a bit when they're escaping and throwing Patronuses at the Dementors: Harry, Hermione, Ron, this, Ron, that, and. And it seems pretty obvious that it's Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, and Hermione Granger that have appeared at the Ministry. Or it seems like Mary would be able to piece it together, or that, you know, somebody would be able to piece it together. Wouldn't they just want to come after Harry Potter anyway for being at the Ministry? Wouldn't that just make them want to come after him anyway? So
yeah. Well, they're already after Harry Potter anyway.
Yeah.
But no, I think the big thing about the locket is, again, without her knowing the locket's gone and making a fuss about it, Voldemort won't get wind that his locket has been found, and the people involved with taking it and stealing it was his one big enemy. You know what I mean? If Voldemort knew he was destroying his Horcruxes, I think he would have gone out and made more. You know, there's so many more things he could have done then to prevent himself from ever destroying all the Horcruxes. You know what I mean?
You're right. And Dolores,
and Harry's this 96-year-old Umbridge, man trying to kill, you know, the last 17 of them.
You're right. And Umbridge would be making a big fuss if her locket was stolen.
Back to what the original question was, though, about how come it didn't affect her as much, was I just thought about it. She didn't wear the locket as long as Ron did either. So that's probably why it didn't affect her as much as it did Ron.
Fair point, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
Because weren't they out there for months?
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, how long did she have the locket from
Mundungus?
What's his name? From
Dung.
Mundungus, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, she could have had it for months too, because they didn't think about this locket till, you know, remember when Dumbledore died? That's like the summer, like before. Let's say that's like June or. You know, and now it's like what? It's like
now
mid-December,
it's September,
maybe?
It's September.
So she's had it on straight for months then if he got it right away. You know what I mean?
Did he say he
and
sold
actually,
it right
no,
away, though?
Mundungus stole it before Dumbledore's death, even. After freaking, what's-his-name's death? After Sirius's.
Oh, good old
Which was like
name.
Years ago.
So all we know is that all we know is that Umbridge came up to Dung while he was selling in Diagon Alley and said, do you have a permit to sell it here? And she said no, and he's like, well, yeah, whatever. And she's like,
Give me that. I'll turn a blind
nice
eye.
Nice necklace. I want it. Well, next was just their kind of their escape. Do you guys have any
escape
kind of comments about their escape?
The escape was interesting. I thought the biggest holy sh moment was when the real what was his name again?
Yaxley?
No. The guy who went home to puke
Reg,
and then
Cattermole.
Reg Cattermole.
Reggie Cattermole.
Yeah, when Reg he came Cattermole. Back and you know, everyone realized there was two of them.
Yeah.
And then that was a very confusing scene. Like
it was,
even
it
Yaxley
is hard to
was
read.
Confused and
it'd be a lot better in a movie, though.
Well, Harry laid out this bald guy.
Yeah, I think that's the cool part. I was going to say that. And, like, Harry is just like, he punches the bald guy that lets them go through. And he's like, he's helping Muggle, you know, Muggleborns escape. He actually confuses everyone. That's just awesome.
Yeah.
I think, but again, this is not going to be a Daniel Radcliffe doing this scene punching. And it's going to be some guy playing Rancorn. And I want to see some big guy just punch another guy.
Oh, guys, what do you think's going to happen? Because this is a Polyjuice moment, but remember, they made a significant change in Chamber of Secrets when they used the Polyjuice. They still had their own voices, which was...
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that because Mrs. Cattermole was all confused in once they knocked Umbridge out. She got all confused, but, like, Harry and Hermione kept addressing each other as each other. So... I don't understand really what's going on there.
She was also worried about her life. She's not paying attention to those little things.
But it's not even a little thing. It's like, Harry, come here. Hermione, come here. Like,
it is.
You know.
It is. Andrew's completely right. And, I mean, more to the point, in the book, they don't have their regular voices. And they shouldn't either. I mean, that was stupid of movie 2 to do it, but it was
Don't in The Goblet of Fire either with Mad-Eye Moody. I think they just changed it because they realized that's how it
you're
happens.
Right, because Mad-Eye Moody. Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's a movie 2.
See, but I do think from a movie standpoint, especially with the trio, it's too confusing while you're watching a movie to follow who Harry, Ron, and Hermione turn into.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think they will change it for the benefit of the moviegoer.
Yeah.
So what do you think
it's just too confusing. Like, especially with these random ministry characters, like, you know, a typical moviegoer will not understand, will probably get confused, especially during these faster paced action scenes. Like, wait, who's who again? I forget. Like, you know, it's not going to have, like, arrows pointing to who's who. You gotta have.
No, but you know what? That's actually what happens. Ron forgets what Harry looked like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to dumb it down.
I don't think they're going to dumb it down. You're right.
Regardless of the. Yeah, I think they're going to have different voices, and what's going to happen is we're going to follow the one person that the movie's through. We're going to follow Harry, and we're going to forget that it's Hermione, but then he's going to be under the, you know, invisibility. He's going to go, Hermione, I'm here. And it's going to go, oh, that's Hermione's character again.
Yeah, I guess so.
What she looked like.
Hopkirk.
And Ron forgot what he looked like. You know what I mean? There's enough in there. The only part that's going to be confusing is like that ending part where
right.
the two Ron, Reg Catamols come out. But then you know what's going to happen is they're going to start coming back. Because
exactly.
Yaxley has a moment of recognition. That's when Harry's scar is going to appear.
Or their voices change.
Like, it's going to,
Or
their voices start changing. You're going to know, like, the moviegoers are not, sorry, I get passionate when we start talking about the movie, even though I love the books. Because I'm a filmmaker, guys.
So I know, guys.
But, you know, it's.
Wait. You're a film major? You've never said that before.
What can I say?
I didn't know that. Wait. But, repeat it like 5 more times because I think I'm gonna forget.
Micah B likes movies. Okay, I'm gonna leave it there. But no, it's one of those things that they can definitely, they can definitely.
Well, keep
it. They don't have to dumb it down. Long as they have the one thread, which is Harry's character as Rancorn, because we follow him, we know that's Harry. And then, you know, Ron's character comes back in. Even if we forgot what it was, he goes, Ron, it's me. He's like, oh, Harry, I forgot what you look like. They bring that back up, so we know what Ron looks like again.
They will cast actors. Yeah, I don't think they'll dumb it. You're right, Mikey. Well, have you seen Stardust? Have you guys seen Stardust?
Well, obviously they're going to cast actors, but I think the way they did it in Chamber of Secrets says something. Sure, they could change it, but I think to avoid confusion, and yes, there will be confusion. I don't care what you guys say. They're still going to, I mean, whatever. We can disagree.
But
we can agree to disagree.
Mad-Eye? But we didn't have Mad-Eye doing a weird fake voice the entire time.
Well, because then
because
you would have known
was
it.
A longer period of time, too.
And the other thing was that you were supposed to know, you weren't supposed to know that that was an imposter.
Yeah,
like, if it was a different voice, people would have been like,
Andrew.
What the hell? No. Although, I guess that's the first time we were meeting Mad-Eye anyway, so nobody would have known.
Actually, wait, you guys are forgetting. Exactly. Wait, I remember. No, it'll be easier to understand because they'll understand because of the Seven Potters. The scene with the Seven Potters with all of those Dan Radcliffe.
That's going to be hard, too.
I don't even know if it'll be hard. It'll just be, they'll understand that kind of stuff happens, so the
it's possible,
filmmakers,
guys.
Filmmakers
it's
will be
not
able to
hard.
Sort of establish that with the scene of the Seven Potters to then, you know, help understand what happens in the Ministry of Magic.
True.
I want to see Dan Radcliffe walking as a Fleur Delacour, hopping around, giving a big old kiss.
So, their escape. It's cool. the saddest moment is when they realize that they won't be able to go back to Grimwald Place anymore.
They don't realize that yet.
No, the saddest moment is when Ron gets splinched.
That doesn't happen yet.
Yeah, but
it
he's okay.
Yet, guys, they're in.
We're skipping this chapter.
They're in midair at the.
Oh right.
When the next chapter happens. Yeah. Harry just feels Hermione's grasp, like, leaving him, and then that's...
So, yeah, it's sad. Well, something in my room keeps beeping.
So that's chapter 13.
All right, so it's time for quote quiz! Okay, this week's quote quiz from chapter 14 is... Can you feel it, though?
Yeah.
I can feel it.
No, that was quote quiz, Matt. That wasn't a question. So. Okay. So let's move on now to make the connection.
Is it make the Matt's connection or make a connection?
Back this week with make what?
Is it make the connection or make? Oh, it is. Oh.
Well, we've always called it make the connection. So
all right,
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll start with Mikey since he's new to this. Oh, and I guess Eric hasn't done one yet either, has he?
So. I've done one before.
Okay,
I haven't done one in a long time because I haven't been here.
All right. Well, I'm gonna give Mikey an easy one.
Okay,
good.
All right.
Thank you.
Let me look. Okay. Mikey B, your make the connection for this week is make the connection between Harry Potter and Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, jeez. Which Anakin, though?
Dude. The one in Star Wars.
Okay, just checking, making sure. Because really, I don't want to make sure. Well, there's another Anakin, but he's Anakin Solo. But sometimes.
Oh, you're right. Okay, in the movies.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to say, Order of the Phoenix is a lot like Attack of the Clones because they're both big babies and whine about a lot of things. Because Harry Potter is like, I'm mad at the world because I'm angsty and I'm all caps Harry. And then in the movie, Anakin Skywalker goes, I killed them all! I hated them! Ah! I think that's a good one, right?
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that's good.
I hate them all! I killed them all like animals! No! I'm angry!
That's good.
Actually, you guys want to hear a Star Wars story? A very quick one that kind of relates to this?
Really quick.
I pulled out my Wii, Nintendo Wii, again, and I set it up properly. I've been playing, Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix. And then I rented Lego Star Wars.
Oh, how is that for Wii?
That game is amazing. Lego Star Wars for the Wii is like the most amazing thing. I beat episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and then I had to return it before I can beat episode 6. So I think I either have to buy it or rent it again.
Oh.
Because Lego Star... And they're making a Lego Indiana Jones, and I'm so excited. The Lego games are so entertaining. Really,
they are.
They're not little kid games. They're awesome. They're Lego games.
I used to love Lego Chess. That was a fun one.
That always froze my
Lego
computer.
Lego Star Wars.
Because I'm the only dork who plays Lego Chess.
Lego Chess, yeah. Well, yeah. Lego Chess inspired me.
Well, make the connection.
Wait, let me say something about this, because I want to tell you the reason why I picked this. Was because the person who sent this in had the most perfect make the connection, and I agree with it.
Oh, okay.
It's so funny. The reason there's a make the connection between Harry Potter and Anakin Skywalker is both the main actors, Daniel Radcliffe and Hayden Christensen, both are bad actors.
That's the worst making the connection. I don't like that one.
It's terrible.
but see, this is what happens though. Let me explain why that's completely wrong.
Oh, okay.
I can explain why that's clear. Harry Potter is originally a fictional character from a novel. Anakin Skywalker, we never had a novel of that. That's George Lucas' vision. Every Star Wars book never dealt with the story of Anakin Skywalker. That was originally released not as a novel, but as a movie. And that's where Hayden Christensen is the canon for that, whereas Harry Potter, the canon for that is the book one, not the movie one, not Daniel
that's
Radcliffe.
That's true. So
thank
you.
I rest my case.
Mikey B's,
there are two different things.
I'm not convinced, but
you can't mess with Hayden Christensen.
I'm sorry, sir. Don't mess with me in Star Wars. I have a Yoda tattoo and a Fox Phoenix tattoo, okay? I
got my two things. None of you mentioned the fact that he's a little boy when he figures out that he's, going to be whisked away and... taken on a
there's a million connections.
There's a million connections, but I wanted to bring up the whiny one because I wanted to change my voice and go.
Oh, it was funny. It was funny. Yeah, it was funny. That was a very scene. That was a very
All right.
And actually, right. You really, like, honestly, go play Lego Star Wars, even if you don't like Star Wars, just to see the angsty, like, Anakin Skywalker as a Lego is so entertaining. That's where that voice came from.
I'm so amazing. Upset that they combined those games, because I have 1 and 2, which was, you know, the original trilogy was the sequel that they made, and now they have the complete saga at, you know, for the Wii, the PS3, and the Xbox 360, and I don't have any of those systems. So I don't have the combined game. Can I have a making the connection, Matt?
I got one for you, but I got Andrew because I like this one for Andrew. Make a connection between Harry Potter and a furry hat.
A furry hat? Well, what does that have to do with me?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, Harry Potter and a furry hat. Yeah, are we talking like a cap or like a... like?
It says a furry hat. Go with it.
Okay. Well, a furry hat is very warm and cozy on your head. It actually sometimes tickles your head because of the fibers that are coming off of it. And when you wear a wizarding's hat or like a witch's hat, your head tingles because when it's a sorting hat, it talks to you.
Boo!
Kind of like a,
I know,
a sorting hat.
I know it's terrible, but that's all you're getting.
That is horrible.
That's all you're getting. Sorry. Okay. That's the best I can do.
Well, the person who sent this...
You had it going with the warm and fuzzy.
Hold on, wait. What did the person who sent it say?
The Harry hat, if Harry was in need of a birthday present for Luna, he could give her a furry hat and tell her it was made from the skin of a crumblehorn snork cack. Also, she probably would appreciate pictures.
Okay.
Or whatever.
All right.
I thought it was going to be a connection between Luna's lion from the Quidditch match.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, that is fuzzy. That is funny. Fuzzy.
Yeah.
If I was a betting man, I would bet that that's going to be in the movie.
My next one's for Eric. Eric?
Yeah.
Are you here? Okay. Make the connection between Harry Potter and receiving an electric shock in a bathtub filled with grape Kool-Aid.
Wow.
There's actually a good explanation for this, so it's not impossible.
Receiving a shock when you're in a bathtub filled with grape Kool-Aid?
Yes.
Well, that would be about as close as I could get to replicating the Ministry of Magic scene with the brain tube. The brain tubs, the tub of the brains in it, and the shocking brains. Like, if I wanted to recreate the Ministry of Magic scene in my own bathtub, that's what I would do. I would get a bunch of grape juice and I would and a hairdryer, and I would shock myself.
Grape Kool-Aid, my friend. Not grape juice.
Oh, grape Kool-Aid, sorry. Yeah, sorry if that fails.
Yeah, that was okay. There's no wrong answers here. Right?
That's true. Right. Well, unless you don't make the connection.
Mm-hmm. See, the listeners... The explanation for that was in Goblet of Fire, Harry takes a bath in the prefix bathroom to solve the golden egg clue with many multicolored waters and bubbles, hence the grape Kool-Aid. He receives a shock when Moaning Myrtle pays him a visit.
See, these are like puzzles. They're like puzzles. You have to
well,
root through your brain and find the
connection. Intelligent one. That was really incredible. I don't like myself. I like myself that much less because I did not make that connection.
Aww. Don't get emo about it.
It's emo cast now.
Yeah.
Okay, who's Laura? You're next.
Oh,
okay,
boy.
Laura. Don't worry, I'm not going to be mean. Make the connection between Harry Potter and putting a poisonous snake in a light bulb, then putting it in a glass box with another lizard and smuggling the box to Texas.
Poor Laura had a bad one last week, too.
Yeah, I did. We're putting a poisonous snake inside of a light bulb, and then we're putting that with a lizard, did you say? In a box?
Putting it in a glass box with another lizard, and then smuggling the box to Texas.
Well, you could definitely draw like a Horcrux kind of parallel there, you know, housing something that's living inside of an inanimate object. I mean, and also the idea that some of Voldemort's Horcruxes were spread out across the continent, like one of them was
in Romania, wasn't it?
So, yeah, I mean, there really aren't any trees in Texas, so you couldn't say that it was in a tree there. But, yeah, and also Voldemort has a snake.
Okay. Okay, good. Good.
And he had her suspended in that ball thing, which is kind of light bulb shaped, sort of.
It's bulbous. Mm. It's bulbous.
Okay. Okay.
What was the actual connection?
I don't know. Wait. Okay. The connection
I
is
made that up.
Poisonous. Yeah, I made it up. No. Poisonous snakes are really dangerous to many people, just like acromantulas are. And in order to smuggle these dragon eggs is to put them into something that isn't clear, such as a light bulb. Then to avoid suspicion, putting it into a box with a less dangerous animal. Then they would be able to smuggle it to wherever they want to. For example, how Hagrid smuggled Aragog into the castle. I don't know.
Oh, I thought it was not. Hagrid did not put Aragog in a light bulb.
I just wanted you to try, Laura.
I wanted to challenge you.
I think you did an awesome job.
No, I'm just wondering where the person got that from. I don't get it.
I don't know.
People reach for these things.
Yeah,
you have to make a good connection, folks.
These are probably the best ones I've got that stuck out of my mind. A lot of you, when you send and make the connection, please give me the connection after you're done. Just don't just put it and then just say, I don't really know the connection, I just like it.
Even though Jamie did
that's
that
what I do, everybody. Don't do
Jamie
what I
that.
Do.
Jamie ruthlessly created connections.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
But maybe that's
I love Jamie.
But what...
That's Jamie's right charm, though. He just does it just
to
see us suffer.
It's true. So what is this pensive possibilities? What is... Because that was the title of the last week's show,
yes,
right?
Well, last week we asked you guys to send in the possible uses for a pensieve, and we had quite a few lists sent in. We thank everyone who contributed lists, but the best one actually was a collaborative effort that we want to read. So we asked you to send in your top 10 list, the top 10 uses for your pensieve. If you had one, what would be the top 10 uses? Because in the book, you know, it's only used to store your thoughts. But then we realized, wait, there's more possibilities. And we came up with some ideas on the show last week. Just bounced some ideas around. And here's one sent in by Kavitha, also known as Padfoot, on the MuggleCast fan forums. She writes, "Hello, MuggleCasters. I'd just like to say that the fan forums and I have created this list. We made a huge list and voted on our favorite 10. You can check out the topic if you'd like to see them all. Here's the link for the full thread, and we'll link to it on MuggleCast.com. And then here is the list." She actually didn't number
these. Top 10
1,
choices
2, 3, 4,
for what
5,
you can
6,
use
7,
a pensieve
8, 9,
for.
10. Is there 10 or 11 here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, let's just read them off anyway.
There is 11.
10. Okay. So the first one, put some cucumbers in it, close it up, and make pickles. When you're done with the pickles, keep them in the pensieve and send it to the P.O. box, or the pensieve object box. Wait, how do you create cucumbers out of pickles? Is there some sort of...
Vinegar.
That's what pickles are, my friend.
Vinegar. Oh,
you
okay. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that pickles were made from cucumbers?
With vinegar? No.
Well, it's other ingredients.
Did you think
too.
They just sprout out of the ground?
Are there pickle trees
in jars?
Laura, I don't know. I've never studied it.
Maybe we'll do pickles 101 in college. Forgive Laura for you not studying it. Maybe next time you create a catchphrase for the show, you should do a little research behind it, you know? Kind of figure out where they
Well, come. I just never really cared, so.
Quack.
So, next item. Use it as a collector when you sit on the streets trying to get We Will Rock You tickets. And that's a little rip at Jamie and I. You know, we can afford them. We don't need to collect them. But thanks for the idea. Third item, hit Laura Mallory over the head with it. It's kind of
sounds
mean.
Like a good idea.
Yeah, I guess so. But you would just say it's not real.
The next one's my favorite. I'm sorry, guys. That's my favorite. It's right up my head. It's right up my alley.
At a sleepover, use your pensieve to stick your friend's hand in for a wonderful prank. It's like
that
when
is-
you... It's like when you stick your friends in a friend's hand.
Warm water.
Apparently, that doesn't always work.
So what happens when you put your hand in it? You pee memories?
Would you like to
like
try
that.
It, Matt?
I guess so.
I'll get my pensieve. We'll give it a try. We'll give it a whirl.
Matt.
Well, I think so. It flushes all the bad memories because that's what urine is. It's just waste.
I'll stand well
that's
back
true.
From you, Matt.
Next item, washing your MuggleCast Pickle Pack shirt in it. I guess that's good, although it might smell a little bit afterwards, especially if you use it as a toilet.
Mm-hmm. All those who have the Pickle Pack shirt, right?
Next one, put all your nightmares in it and drunk people you hate in it.
Dunk people.
Oh, dunk. I thought I said drunk. Well, we know what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, really.
Put all your nightmares in it and dunk people you hate in it. Next item, put it outside and use it as a bird bath. That'd be nice.
Yeah. It depends on who's pensive of it, though.
Actually, this one's my new favorite.
Put a motor and bubbles in it and use it as a foot massager.
That one's really inventive.
Second to last one, used to house pet fish. That'd be okay, but you'd always... it's not glass, so you'd have to look in it from the
and
top.
And also, the fish would know all your deepest secrets, so you never know.
See, are we looking at these as if your memories are in it at the same time?
That's what a pensieve is.
That's what it is.
No, I realize this, but I thought we were just using the basin or something. I don't know.
Well, that would be funny if you were making pickles in your pensieve while memories were floating around it. And by the time you actually construct the pickles, you take the pickle out, chomp on it, and relive one of your memories and be like, ooh, that's a good pickle.
Memory pickles! Can you imagine that?
It's like crack brownies.
We should put a patent on those.
What?
It's like crack brownies.
That's a tasty
How
pickle.
How can you compare memory pickles?
Because you said you're putting something into a food. Like when people put
you could put your pensieve in the freezer and have little ice cubes of your memories and have a nice little comfortable
Jello pensive
little
shots.
Jello cubes or memory cubes.
I have lime Jello in the fridge right now. It's tasty. Anyway.
Awesome.
And the last item, cry into it when MuggleCast stops doing weekly episodes.
Which never happened. We were just kidding.
That's
by
funny.
The way, about MuggleCast.
Yeah, no, we weren't.
So thanks everyone on the MuggleCast fan forums for creating that. See, that's a good idea. That's what people do on the forums. They collaborate on ideas and thoughts about the show. MuggleCastFan.net.
Yay.
All right, well, it is time to wrap up today's show. This is a long episode. Hey, Laura, what's the P.O. Box?
You can send everything except anything pickle-related to P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
We also have a MuggleCast hotline set up for the day that we do get back to voicemails. And if you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. In the United Kingdom, it's 020-8144-0677. And in Australia, the number is 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast to get in touch with us. No matter how you call us, just remember to keep your message under 60 seconds and take out some background noise so your call is crystal clear. We'll get back to those when we have time someday. I don't know if it'll ever happen, so maybe we should stop making that announcement. There's also a feedback form on MuggleCast.com to get in touch with any one of us, or use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Of course, Matthew B. at staff.mugglenet.com and Mikey B. at staff? Or
no,
is it just Mikey?
Mikey. It's just Mikey.
Okay.
It's M-I-K-E-Y. It's like Mickey, but no E.
You mean C.
C. I do have an E. M-I-K-E-Y. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm tired. It's a long day already. I had waffles this morning.
We also have the community outlets on MuggleCast.com. We got MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing in the forums over at MuggleCastFan.net. So that does it for today's show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Once again, I'm Andrew Sams with the Nose Bubble.
I'm Mikey B. Mikey B.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm Laura Thompson without a nose bubble.
I'm Eric Skull. And floating in a tub of grape Kool-Aid.
And I'm Matt Britton, I guess.
Yeah! Matt Britton!
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week for episode 131.
Sayonara!
Woo! Happy February!
Bye!
Bye! Dude, I wanted to build that up. I wanted to be like, and I'm Link. I and everything. But that's what Mikey did.
Shut up.
Go, come on. Honestly, can you not imagine me sitting in front of my computer, dancing in front of the computer screen going, and I'm Maccabee. Yeah. Anyway.
But see, if it was up to me, I would say, because this is one long show, this is MuggleCast, episode 130, for February 2nd, 2008.